And we are live in the completely illegitimate streaming services of YouTube. I've already struck before I even started. One of the folks in our live stream here, as we're getting ready to go live, said, I think I need some life insurance. And I said, if anyone depends on you, just talking to them by text, you know, if anyone depends on you, you need life insurance. And I wanted to be further with that and said, if no one depends on you, you need at least to have enough to put yourself in the ground or cremate or whatever yourself. They blocked it. They blocked me from posting in my own chat. Because to say that, apparently, I don't know, does it offend the unalive? I don't know. Whatever. YouTube sucks. I got something else to tell you guys about YouTube sucking. Oh, by the way, this is a survival podcast, and I'm Jack Spirko, your host. I got some stuff on my mind I want to vent off in right at the beginning today. Joel Riles, my good friend, sponsor of the show, an expert council member, dog trainer extraordinaire, he just lost his entire YouTube channel. Now, fortunately, he had backups, and I think he's replaced almost everything he lost on a new YouTube channel. I'm waiting for him to send it to me so I can share it with y'all. I don't know what he did, but I highly doubt it was worthy of having his channel completely shut down and canceled overnight. I always live with that looking over my back. Like, you know, I've been on YouTube for almost 20 years. I've had lots of strikes. I've been to YouTube jail, et cetera. I know I'm shadow banned. I'm kind of surprised I've never actually been shut down all the way. They certainly can at any time. And that's why I recommend any of you content creators out there. If you're streaming, it's really easy to just stream to multiple platforms and then rip the audio and if you say you're a podcaster and you're not on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, no, you're not a podcaster, you're a vlogger. Make sure there's multiple versions of your work out there. Because trusting YouTube, which is trusting Google, has been proven to be stupid for a long time. I won't get into it today because it has nothing to do directly with what we're talking about today, but I can give you 10 good examples of Google absolutely screwing over people. Why do you think they took away Don't Be Evil from their corporate charter? I'll tell you why, because they're going to do evil. That's the only reason you would do that, right? What are we going to talk about today? Well, kind of in this vein, because it's about how to see things and think about things. But today's episode is called 20 Things We Must Unlearn. And we are going to kick the school system a little bit today, but the school system's only part of the problem. A lot of the problem is self-inflicted, and a lot of the problem is societal. A lot of the problem comes from school, but I bet you think I'm talking about college, which they get plenty of blame. But K-12 is the biggest part of your programming. I mean, if you think about it, when is a human being most susceptible to brainwashing and control mechanisms and implanting behaviors that will last for the rest of their life? When they're 40 and they're a grown-ass man or woman and they've already made up their own mind about who and what they are? Or when they're 5 and in kindergarten, you tell them to take a nap and share with Billy? And if you get them from the time that they're 5 or in some cases younger with preschool, all the way up until they're officially an adult as a young adult at 18, or many people graduate a few months before their birthday or whatever, and they're 17, but they're practically 18 at that point, then how much control have you enacted across the entirety of their lives? Then we couple that with the media, and we couple that with sheep syndrome. What's sheep syndrome? Look around you. There they are. They're the sheep. They're out there chewing their cud and being retarded and all the other things. And there is a human desire to conform so that we are not singled out and attacked by our fellow humans. Or in this case, we're humans and they're sheep humans. And so, guys, I want to come at this today with more of, it doesn't really matter why you believe the things that we're going to talk about on learning today. It only matters that. If it came from school, fine. If it came from your job, fine. If it came from the TV set, fine. If it came from social media, fine. If it came from your neighbor, fine. If it came from your daddy or your mommy's mommy or whatever, fine. All that matters is you accept the fact that it's not true and you decouple yourself from it so you can live the life that you were born to live. Because most people, I was going to say most of you, but a lot of you are because you're the kind of person that would be tuning into content like this in the first place. But most people are not living the life that they were born to live. And to me, that's one of the saddest things in the world for people. Is because I know that eventually, because even when you've lived a great life, and I have, and I've had a lot of accomplishments, and I've done a lot of things, the older I get, the more I sit back and go, I wish I would have done this differently. I wish I would have done that differently. And I always temper it with, no, you don't. And the reason that you don't is that might have been a better choice, all things considered. But what you have now is so wonderful. If you would have arced your life in a different, you know, bifurcation when you were 17, you might not have your son and your wife and your grandchildren and your podcast. You might even have measurably in some ways more things or stuff in your life. But knowing what I know now is always how that question comes up. And knowing what I know now, I don't want to give this up. That's by living the life you're born to live. It's the way you feel that way. Most people, I think if you asked them in their 50s or 60s, would you go back and change your life if you could? I think the majority of people would say yes. I think the majority of people would say yes before they even thought about it. Maybe less people would say yes if they actually thought it through. That's a problem too. We're going to try to address all this today because I know I think back and I don't think about major changes. Like I should have studied this instead or whatever. But I do come to some realizations as I get older, like things I can't do now, even though I don't want to, but if I wanted to, it would be too late. For instance, if I wanted to become an attorney right now, right, that would require college. That's 4 years, then 3 years of law school. And then a bunch of other bullshit that you have to do before they finally bless you, let you take the bar and all that. I mean, it's an 8 year, 9 year process. I'll be collecting Social Security almost by the time that I would be done with that process. In fact, I definitely could be collecting Social Security 9 years from now if I chose to. So I can't do that. So when you start analyzing your life that way, there is some regret. And my regret is never those things, like these major life arc things, because I'm happy where I'm at. But it's like I'll remember sometime like something I said to somebody where I was unkind, maybe all the way back in like school. And I was actually a pretty nice guy. So if you're a dick, you might have a lot more of this, right? Like, I wish I wouldn't have done that. I wish I wouldn't have said that. And when I look at these things we need to learn and learn to unlearn, I realize that they may not be directly the reason you have some of those regrets, but they're often indirectly. We feel defensive because we're not being who we're supposed to be. And therefore we lash out and we're harsh to somebody when we shouldn't be. I think sometimes I'm harsh because I really believe that's the thing the person needs to hear. I had a guy recently contacted me from the class currently working through the AI course. I'm falling behind, but I'll catch up eventually. I'll do it tomorrow. And I said, and I was pretty hard. I said, there is no tomorrow. Graduate with your class. Go do it because you're halfway through. And if you let these things get in your way of doing it now, you'll never come back to it and it'll never be the same and you'll lose all the momentum. And I even sent him a little short video that's taken out of Rocky, the one with Carl Weathers, where Rocky fights Mr. T. And Rocky says, I'll do it tomorrow, because he's tired. He doesn't want to keep going, you know. And what's his name? Carl Weathers' character, Apollo Creed, right, says what? There is no tomorrow. There is only now. So sometimes I'm harsh on people that way. That I don't apologize for. But there's time when that part of me has bled through in my life. And I believe that happens a lot less now than it did when I was 20. But that's because I'm living more authentically today. And these 20 things are a big part of why. I had to unlearn them too. So that's what we are going to talk about today. With that, let's go ahead and hear from our two sponsors of the day before we do. Sponsor day number one today is Jeff, the Berkey Guy Gleason. You can find his website at USABerkeyFilters.com. You know, every single time that you hear, even if it's not you that's being directly spoken to, something about boil water advisory, right? 9 times out of 10, the way that they know you need to boil the water is somebody already got sick. And you already drank the water that has the things in it that made somebody else sick. Maybe you don't get sick. Maybe you didn't get enough of it. Maybe it didn't quite get to your level of the pipe shit and all. But you see what I'm saying? If you're always filtering your water, you can stop worrying about this. And Berkey makes some of the most reliable and most cost-effective water filtration systems in the world. And the place you want to get yours is from Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason. There's no moving parts. It really can't fail if you're smart enough to put it together and test it to make sure it's not seeping by the filters. That's all you have to do. And once you do that and set it up, it looks beautiful wherever you put it, and it makes the best tasting water you will ever drink, at least out of the base water you're going to start with. I'm going to tell you, the water that comes out of my well, I do not care for. I don't know what it is. It doesn't smell bad or anything. It doesn't look cloudy. It tests perfectly fine. But there's something about the taste of it. Like, I love the taste of the water out of my well in Arkansas. The water that comes out of this limestone here is just not good tasting. Goes through a Berkey, it tastes great. It tastes like the best bottled water you ever get and costs a hell of a lot less. So check out Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason at usaberkeyfilters.com. And when you do, remember, he's got a lot of cool stuff there, not just water filters. Next up today, Biltong USA. That's Anton. And Anton started making Biltong as a professional, heavily anyway, when COVID hit. He had just opened a little small grocery store and restaurant, and then, well, we all know what happened. The world fell apart, not because of a virus, but because of government. And he was like, I need to do something to pay for all this shit that I just established that's shippable. And he realized, you know what? The answer's always been right in front of me. He's from South Africa. He's been making biltong his whole life. There's a lot of opportunity there. He started making some of the best biltong in the world and shipping it right to people's doors. And he's built his entire company on that. He's got a lot of other cool stuff too. He imports stuff from all around the world. He's an amazing guy, amazing set of stuff, but the biltong is the anchor. Check out the biltong. Check out the Biltong sticks. That's STIX. You'll love those. If you order the sticks, I'm going to give you some advice. They cut little strips. They're closer to jerky. And I'm pretty sure that the trimmings off of the bigger cuts that he makes a Biltong off of. But because they're thinner and smaller, they dry more and a little bit hard. And they're always the long grain this way. Take a pair of shears, kitchen shears or scissors, and just cut them in little bite-sized pieces. Throw them in a bowl and eat them like a snack. They are freaking, I actually like them better than the regular Biltong. I never thought I would say something about that like that about Biltong, but yeah. Also, the Drew War sausage and the Calabanazi sausage, check those out. The Drew War sausage tastes a lot like Biltong, except in a sausage form. The Calabanazi, if you like that kind of funky fermented taste, they are a little bit of a ferment-cured Middle Eastern sausage. They also have caraway seeds in them. Those, man, I love those. But I'm telling you the fermented thing and the caraway thing because I found two types of people with Calabanazi, and only two. Oh, my God, this is amazing. Where did you get it? No, I don't care for that. So just know if you want to try it, maybe get a small order and test it first and see if you like it. But if you like sausages like Landjägers or something, other fermented dry sausages, real salamis, pepperonis, chorizos, that are actually dry cured and fermented, you'll like the Calabanazi too. All right, with that, let's go ahead and get into it. And we got some good folks showing up today, man. Lots of chatter going on in the live chat. Please tune in. I'll try to put some of you guys up on screen, but I'll miss people easily. So make sure if you have a question, you put the word question. This is obviously for people in the live feed only. The word question, all caps, and then a hyphen, and then, you know, ask your question. Or you can put comment in all caps. Pretty much anything in all caps tells me you want a response to it. And if I see it, I'll put a little star on it, and it'll be there at the end. All right. And I want to say also, always makes me happy when Humble shows up. Humble Mechanic in the house. Glad you're here, man. Thanks for showing up. All right. So let's start off with, if we're going to talk about things that we need to unlearn, we need to figure out what the problem is first. And the problem comes down to learning versus training. You don't untrain. You do unlearn. Right. Even if you were trained in things, but there is a difference between training and learning. Learning is the act of gathering and assembling information so that you now know something or know how to do something that you didn't know or know how to do before you did it. That's learning. And training and learning are not even, I would say they're what we call Siamese twins. They're like attached to each other, but they're still distinctively individual. because the differential is learning is in general, if proper, a self-led process. Even if you have an instructor or take a course, it is still the student who is attempting to learn due to their own innate desire to know a thing or to master a skill, right? That is learning. And learning then always has an individual component to it. And this is why schools fail, because they have to do some of that, but they're not set up for it. Because what they really are there to do is to train. And to train is to condition an organism until it cannot behave differently under the circumstances it's been trained for than how it's been trained. An example is my dog. Like, my dog doesn't really learn unless she learns for herself. Like, oh, I bet I can figure out how to open this door. That's learning. Training is to condition her. So my dog Belle is now trained so well with recall. If I put her outside and she's somewhere out of my property and I open my door and I whistle, good loud whistle, if more than 5 seconds go by and she doesn't come running to the door, I know that I need to go out the other door and try again, or I need to walk around and find her, or just let her be. Why? The only reason she's not responding is she's somewhere on the property far enough away, wind blowing or something, she can't hear me. We all think dogs are super hearers. They hear a little bit better than people, but they hear at a broader range. But the thing you can hear and the thing they can hear, they don't hear it that much better than you. A little bit, but not that much. So if you were out behind my back garden and I went out my front door and whistled as loud as I can, you wouldn't hear it, neither would she. If the wind's blowing, there's no way in hell, or the neighbor's running a chainsaw, no way in hell you'd hear me. But if I go out the back door and whistle, her dog hearing is good enough. She will hear it. And within 5 seconds, there she's running in. That's training. My old dog, Charlie, that operated on a totally different level, when I would say something to him like, hey, buddy, I don't want any chickens on the porch today. And he'd just look at me like, all right. And I would open that door and put that dog out. I didn't have to say another word. That wasn't trained. He learned what I wanted, and he learned how to do it himself. That's unusual for a canine, but all humans should be operating at that level. You are not. Not in our society. We are not trained to learn. We are trained to obey. So that leads right into, why do we have the school system in its current form? What is its purpose? Is it to make us enlightened? Is it to make us educated? Or is it to domesticate us? Is it to lead to compliance? I mean, that really goes to what? Stafford Beer. Systems thinking. The purpose of the system is what it does, not what it claims to do. It's actually ridiculous to argue for or even against the system based on what it purports to do. It's pointless. Because if you were arguing with the current system of education that we have, and you believe or you accept or you even argue back from the standpoint of the stated purpose of the system to educate our children so that they can become capable of going to the next level once they graduate, whether it's directly into a job or on to college or on to trade school or on to military, how do you argue against that? That's like arguing against our puppies cute. Right. So if you're playing that game then, but what does it do? That we can argue with, because it doesn't matter what it purports to do. Well, here's what it does. Number one, and this is why we have it. The number one thing it does is it creates obedient workers. People, in the words of what George Carlin, people that are just smart enough to run the machines, but just dumb enough to never question authority. I think that's the way he put it. That's what it creates. It was all designed. You can see it because of the conflict and the friction that we have today, because so many of the jobs of yesterday don't exist in that form anymore. I bet you many of you, especially if you're in my age, you've had different kinds of jobs. And what I mean by that is you've had a job where you have walked in and maybe even had a time clock, but definitely somebody penciled you in and penciled you out. Like, you had to be there at a specific time and you had a specific thing that you had to do. Factory type production work, right? I had a job when I first moved to Texas, packing boxes in a warehouse. Made about $2 over minimum wage. It was a horrible job, but I needed a job, so I took it. You had it to punch in with a time clock. And if your supervisor saw that you forgot to punch in and you went right to the line and started working, and then you realize, like, shit, I got to break away. And you, 15 minutes, you run over and punch in, and he knows you weren't even there on time. You were there early. You still didn't get paid for that time. That is the kind of job that this country, like the blue collar workers in this country, had. The vast majority of jobs were something like that, unless you were in sales or some form of professional, if you go pre-1970. And certainly if you go pre-1965. That was where that five-year period, when things started to technologically change over a lot. And you've probably also had jobs where you kind of like, you don't have that much of a regimented system. Your job and your performance was based more. Sure, you need to be on time. Sure, you need to not be taking lunch from 10 to 2. But mostly what you're judged on is, are you where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there? Do I see you there? And when I look at your work, is it what I expect from you? And that could be anything from a receptionist to an account executive to an inside salesperson to an engineer to a graphics artist to a web designer to even a mechanic, right, Charles? Right? Like if he changes out the parts, like if he's always there, and it's not as regimented because you're not sitting on an assembly line, screwing a piece on a lamp and handing it to the next retard. Yeah. Well, the school system we have today was built off the Prussian system between the 1860s and the 1920s. It was completely hashed out and we haven't changed since. We might have changed some of the information. We should obviously change the textbooks. We started using computers and tablets, but the system itself is the same. And it's primarily operated the same way a factory is, or a prison factory. Be on time, get on the bus, stand in line, go where you're supposed to do. When the bell rings, move over here. When the bell rings, move back over there. Do whatever you're told to do. Don't question it. It's not okay. And I get some of why that regiment is there, because you got to 50 kids in a classroom, you got to control them, but it doesn't teach, it trains. It trains in conditions. It creates obedient leeches on society as well. We have about half our society today that does nothing productive. Probably 30 to 40% live almost completely off government money or somebody else's money or a combination. Right, where you got like two people that are together, but they're not married and they don't have the same address, at least officially. And one's on welfare with two kids and the other person works. But they're both living on that money plus the government money plus the cheap housing. Like you start looking at it that way, it's probably close to half the damn country is living off of a dependence. And so the question then becomes, are they a leech fully, like a tick or a leech, or are they like a part leech? Like a hybrid. They actually, some form of productivity comes out of it, but there's still a leeching. Like, and the way I determine leech versus somebody simply getting back what they put in is exactly that. If that person is getting back more than they contribute, there's some level of a leech. It might be a little tiny one, but they're leeching the system. If they're getting up to exactly what they put in, then they're not. They're getting their own money back. It was stolen from them. And that continues into retirement. Like, I'll never get back what they took from me on Social Security whenever I finally can draw it, right? I'll never get it back. But there is a point, and with Social Security, I would even say, like, well, what would it have been worth if it would have been in, like, boring retirement, like an independent private retirement account? You'll never get that out of it. It'll never happen. It also creates a class/race/sex/other division. That's what the education system we have today does. And then agitates the difference. And you've seen them ramp it up. Like, since the obedient worker no longer is a thing, and they kind of don't really have, they keep doing it, but they can't ramp that up. It doesn't go anywhere. It's a ramp to nothing. Like Gavin Newsom's freaking light rail system. It's a train to nowhere, a track to nowhere, a bridge to nowhere. they can't really do much more with obedient leeches, because if you have any more leeches than you have now, the system breaks. You have to have about half of the people be productive for the other half not to be. Yeah. So now the last thing that you really have is this divide. And what do we call it when a ruling power uses the differentiation between the classes and agitates it and then steps in as a mediator to further the agenda of the ruling authority? Well, folks, we call that fascism. So when they're screaming fascism and Nazi in the street, they're right. They're just wrong about how. They can't tell you what I just told you because they were trained, not taught how to think. It also provides the illusion of intelligence, especially once we move into the collegiate level. The illusion of intelligence. If I told you nothing about two people that were 25 years old, and I know y'all might think a little bit better, but for a lot of people, if I said they got two people, they're both males, they're both 5'11", 180 pounds, decent looking dudes, and the only thing that I'll tell you that's not the same about them is one named Bill has a college degree, and even let's say something useful, like computer science, and Mike has no degree whatsoever. Which one's smarter? Most people say, well, Bill, his degree in computer science. Mike might be a hell of a lot smarter in a lot of ways. The fact that Bill went to school, checked the boxes, and passed the tests, you know, where's his degree from? MIT? Probably pretty fucking smart, to be honest, right? Or is his degree from, you know, Sheboyganville University and gas station? Maybe it's not as impressive, you know. And maybe the guy that went to Sheboygan University and gas station might be smarter than the guy from MIT. You don't know that. But we have been convinced that the mere addition of initials to the end of a name creates intelligence. And it simply doesn't. In fact, one of the arguments being used by academia constantly against people who are not part of their little clique, no matter how right, especially when that person's really right about what they're pointing out, you don't have any credentials. Who gives a fuck? Is the idea correct? That's what really matters. And then we have put education for the real world, the responsibility of education for our children and our young adults so that they can go out to the real world and conquer things. Think about every freaking graduation speech, commencement address you've ever listened to. You now have the tools to go out and, you know, do all the things and blah, blah, blah. Bullshit, 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 bullshit. You're the captains of tomorrow and soaring rhetoric and yeah. But who do we put the responsibility to do that in the hands of people who mostly have never lived in the real world? I can think just in my family, five teachers. Just in my family orbit. I have five teachers in my family orbit. One has done anything ever outside of education. One of the five. 20%. I think that number, I don't think my sample size is big enough to give you an honest number. That may be a little bit correct at the university level, but in general, most people that teach K-12 have never done anything of any, maybe they worked at Burger King when, you know, part-time with Kamala or something in one summer going through school. But that's becoming even very uncommon. When I was a kid, and when I say kid, I mean 20 something, I had a lot of friends that were in my kind of age range. And a lot of them were in college, like actively going to college, many of them full time. Just because I wasn't going doesn't mean they weren't. And almost everybody I knew that was doing that had a job. Now, maybe they didn't have a full time job and go to school. That's a big ask. But they had a part time job to help get through school. And now the vast majority of people that I see going to college, they don't have any, all they do is borrow as much money as they need to survive for those 4 to 5 years and get money from mom and dad on top of it so that they can not, you know, I don't have to work and go to school and take away from my time of studying and learning. You learn a lot by working. You establish a reputation as being willing to work and to do a good job, and you get valuable experience to make connections. But nobody tells them that anymore. So we now have the vast majority of people, when they come out of 12th grade and either go to college or go get a job or something, they've never actually been taught by somebody that ever did anything in the world they're going into, unless they're going to be a teacher too. And that is, if you don't see how that's a problem, that's because you're a product of the system that I'm criticizing. So that brings us, what are the 20 things that we need to unlearn? Number one, and this goes to media, this goes to the medical facilities, this goes to academia, all three, and the government, right? The proper diet is based on grains, seed oils, and prepackaged foods. Now, if you think this is where I'm going to get on a carnivore or a keto soapbox, I'm not. If you eat some potatoes every day or a little bit of really good, high quality, you know, whole grain sourdough bread or something like, I'm not going to fault you. You do what you want to do. You're a grown ass man or woman. I'll treat you like one, which means I don't get to tell you how to live. I ain't the government. I ain't the school system, and I ain't the news anchor. So I don't tell you how to live. I try to help you learn how to think. That's what this whole day is about. So there's a lot of ways you can eat that are healthy that may not be the way that I've eaten and fixed my life and fixed my health. But they all involve eating real food, not eating toxins and poisons, not eating red dye number 9 or whatever the fuck else they put in your food. If the ingredients list is this long and you can't pronounce half the words, don't fucking eat it. But what do they tell you? Up until Kennedy, RFK Jr., right, made this change, the government's official advice is that everybody should be eating 11 servings of whole grains a day. Get the fuck out of here. You are not a cow. You are not designed to live on that. And to tell people that it's completely safe to consume things that, unless fully refined, would kill them, like cottonseed oil and canola oil, is criminal. And so we need to unlearn the advice we've been given on nutrition. And one of the reasons that's so important is because what we put in our body has such a magnified impact on the people we become. Sick people are easy to control. Sick people are apathetic. Sick people lack energy. Sick people lack the will to rebel. You think they only did it because it's cheap and they make a lot of money? No. I don't think this was a cabal where everybody got together and excellent and got around a table in the New World Order headquarters and said, I know what we're going to do. We're going to put all this shit together this way to make them. I think that most of the food system we have today came about as technology changed and they wanted to make food that could be transported without refrigeration and stay good, stay where it wouldn't kill somebody and it would smell good and taste okay. And they could make, and then when it became obvious what they were doing, they built the whole system on it. The pharmaceutical built their system on it. It's like, now we have to defend it, even if we wouldn't have built it that way in the first place. Of course, what am I? I'm crazy redneck duck farmer, right? All right. Next, we also need to unlearn this one. I guarantee you've heard this, some version thereof. Don't ask people for money or things because it's rude. Don't ask. Don't ask people for money. That's rude. Don't ask people for things. That's rude. How do you get anywhere in life living that way? Now, there is a balance, but that's part of being a fucking grown up. Now, if you're walking around the street asking everybody you see for $5 because you need gas home or some shit, and you're a panhandler and a liar and a scammer. That's not what I'm talking about. But when you know what you want and you know who can help you get there, the most logical thing you can do is attempt to use that, to use a relationship or build a relationship in such a way that that person not just does help you, but wants to, and that they benefit as much from helping you as you do from them helping you. Right. Or they're just in the point, like, I'll help people now because I can. And that doesn't mean everybody that asks for help gets it. But if you don't ask, the answer is always no. Not to mention, though, there's so many things that we need to ask for to get anywhere. Don't ask people for things because it's rude. You know what a thing is? How about a fucking date? You got these retards on TV now telling you the reason young men don't know how to ask a woman out is because of AI chatbots. Like they knew what the fuck they were doing 10 years ago before anybody heard of ChatGPT. No, they didn't. This is not a new problem. That's their angle to push their agenda. And because you don't think, you don't see it. That's what that is. That's what that is. Now, this is a bigger part of it. We've been teaching kids this forever. Don't ask for nothing. Don't take nothing. You want to get into college? How do you, go to a fucking interview? You want a job? You go to a fucking interview. You ask for the job. The job is a thing that comes with money. So to get a job, you have to ask for a thing and money. And if you want to have a good job and good terms, then you have to ask for other things called terms. Like, you know, I know you say that no one gets a vacation their first year, but I already have a vacation booked in November for a week. And I can't take this job if I can't go do that because I already made a commitment to my family. I bet you they're going to shit you a way to make that happen because you asked for it. But if you don't ask for it, the answer is no. You damn sure don't take the job, lose all your leverage, and then ask. We'll get to asking for permission in a bit. We've also been taught to obey people with titles, positions, and letters in their name. Do you work for that person? No, then fuck them. If you wouldn't listen to me or your best friend saying the same thing, don't listen to them just because they have a master's degree or they're a cop or they're a soldier or they're a teacher or put any a lawyer, you know. Now, if you're asking about a question about the law, then the person that is a lawyer, especially if they specialize in the type of law you're talking about, is probably going to give you a better answer than a person that just watches, you know, CSI and legal shows and crime shows. Absolutely. But they don't get a God pass over you just because they have a title or a credential. There's a lot of bad doctors. There's a lot of bad lawyers. You call the doctor, I'm sorry, you know what you call the student who graduates last in medical school? Doctor. If you have a medical school that, you know, graduates 2,000 students this year, the guy that came out top of the class number one is called doctor, and the guy at the bottom of the class is called doctor. He probably still knows more about medicine than me. But there's probably a lot of things about health that I know that he doesn't. I'm not going to bow down and kiss his ass just because he's got a title, and you shouldn't either. And that's with anybody at anybody's title at all, unless that title is you do work for him. There's a certain amount of compliance you need to give an employer. You agreed to work for them. When you did, you knew you weren't going to be the CEO, so you're going to have a supervisor somewhere in that company, and it happens to be Phil, and Phil says you need to be on time Monday to Friday, 7 to 5, and this is how your work needs to be done, and your reports need to be handed in Thursday afternoon. So, now, you have to listen to him, but the guy that's maybe five cubicles over, but he's senior to you in the company, but you're nowhere within his chain of command, you might be polite to him. You may be nice to him, but he doesn't have any authority over you. It doesn't matter who he is. It doesn't matter that he's a director or some shit. Director of what? Don't be a dumbass and go provoke the guy because he probably can make your life miserable, but he's not got any real authority over you. I worked for a captain when I was in Honduras, when I was in the army, and there was a colonel that wanted me to do something. And that captain stood between me and that colonel, looked me right in the eye and said, Spirico, you know who you work for. Go now. Yes, sir. And gone. That colonel, if that captain wasn't there, I would have done whatever the hell he said. He had every bit of military authority to ask me to do that. When my captain, who I directly reported to, told me to leave, I left. That was on him at that point. So there is a place for respecting titles, credentials, etc. But unless it's directly over you in some sort of agreed upon contract, you need to at least think before you do it. Again, I will value the person with a legitimate credentials opinion a little bit more until it doesn't make sense. I still have to think it through. Does this make sense? Because I've heard plenty of economists that can't tell you how money is created. I've heard plenty of economists make a case for socialism, which shows economic ignorance. So just because you're an economist doesn't mean that you're right. We need to unlearn that. Because every single person they bring on TV, this is a doctor, this is a retired general, doesn't mean he's not an idiot. I can't remember the comedian, but I remember this one comedian he was talking about. He was like, you know, they said she's so smart. She's so smart. And I think he was talking about Shakira. And Shakira actually does seem smart, by the way. But he's like, and they're like, she speaks seven languages. And he's like, so what? You can be stupid in seven languages. She, again, she's not. But you get the point. He's going for laughs, but you get the point. Like, just because you can do a certain thing doesn't mean you're smart at other things. There's so many economists who want to tell you why cryptocurrency is a scam, and they lump crypto and Bitcoin together. You're already write them off. I just had somebody ask me about this on Facebook. He said, what is your opinion of this guy's opinion? I already knew it didn't sound good. And when I it was a little 3-minute video, and he's some important person. I don't know who, because I don't care, but he's some economist or something. I testified in front of Congress. Oh, whatever. So as soon as he mixed Bitcoin and crypto, I'm like, yeah, whatever. But his reasoning made it even worse. Let's say he didn't do that. His reasoning as to why Bitcoin has come down so much in price is the addition of ETFs. And when the ETFs came along, people that were professional investors came along, and when they have a certain amount of money that they've made on the table, they take it off the table. In other words, they sell. You know the problem with that? You want to know the problem with that? Let's just pause just for a second so I can find this right now. The problem is that the data of these ETFs is public, and if there was a sell-off, we should see it. So let me get this page up right now, and then y'all that are in the video anyway, you can judge for yourself here. All right. That graph that you see, and I'll describe it for people in the audience, it moves from left to right on the axis. And if you look, it actually right about here is where the price of Bitcoin was still kind of holding on. It was still going up. Right here's about where that price really started coming down about the 6th of January. Coming down hard. What happens here? It goes fucking parabolic up. If he was right, that line should go down at least a little bit. But the Chads that are buying the ETF are buying the shit out of it, and that the total combined ETF holdings now is over 1.2 million Bitcoin. So how in the hell is a sell-off of ETFs the problem when you have this arc here? And the answer is it isn't. But you have to think that through. The average person will listen to that guy and say, but he's a big-time economist. He testifies in front of Congress. He's on TV. He has big old fucking initials after his name. He must be smart. He's a fucking idiot. He made a easily proven false claim to explain his entire theory because he never even checked first. Freaking retard. I don't care how many initials you have. You do not obey people just because of their title and what have you, unless you're contractually obligated to do so. I'm not saying they're always wrong. I'm saying think it through. Next, textbooks are never wrong. Textbooks are always wrong. You know why we get new textbooks? Now, if it's in something like history and 20 years go by and we want the history to cover 18 years ago, okay, I get that. But when we completely reboot the textbook for like physical science or something, that's because some shit that we understand changed, which means the old book by default was wrong. You want an example? Here's one I could never forget. I think I could be an old senile man, won't know what happened 5 minutes ago. I will never forget this. I was sitting in a science class in 8th grade, and I'm looking at the book. And I open the book to the back, and the back is an infographic, and it's about oil and coal and natural gas. And it says we're going to have 35 years of oil, and it was something like 78 years of natural gas and 135 years of coal, but it was 35 years for oil. And the reason that hit me is my dad at the time ran a gas station and tire shop. Like, he owned it. And I thought immediately, because an 8th grade kid thinks differently than, you know, a grown man. And I thought, oh, shit, what will dad do? And then I remembered that the freaking date a book was published was in the front of the book. So this is about 1984. And I turned to the front of the book and looked the copyright date up. It's 1978. Oh, shit. So I start doing math on a piece of scrap paper. Teacher comes over scowling down at me, thinking I'm fucking off. Plenty of reason to think I'm fucking off because I fuck off all the time. She realizes what I'm doing, and she starts praising my work. So it's good you're doing that. Now, again, this is the 1980s. Right? This isn't global warming bullshit. This is out of oil bullshit. I figure out the date, and I'm like, huh. Now, there's plenty of time to figure out what to do. And she goes into this long-ass bullshit speech. But you don't understand, John. In less than 10 years, the amount of oil that we're getting is going to start going down. Prices are going to skyrocket. It's going to be awful. We really need to figure out a solution, and no one knows what it is yet. I'm freaked the fuck out. I go home, tell my daddy, he goes, shit, that woman's an idiot. She shouldn't be teaching anybody. Well, history has shown my old man was right. That book was definitively wrong. We should have been out of oil about 15 years ago, according to that book. Anybody out of oil yet? Has the production even gone down yet? So textbooks are wrong. Now, textbooks are also usually right, which is what creates the illusion of they're never wrong. What I'm saying is you can't base decisions in the real world on what the book says. That can be a factor, but it cannot be the deciding factor independent of experience and real-world feedback and results. And this is true everywhere. And it's not always a huge critical thing, but sometimes it's one of those things like it's only critical to the person applying it. And I remember I did a class with Dave Jackie from the permaculture world on designing food forests. And Dave has this two book set that he co-authored with a guy named Eric Tussemeyer. And it is the definitive guide to plants in North America. When they bloom, what family they're in, what they're related to, what their attributes are, what their requirements are, you know, how they reproduce. Like everything you can think of for every plant that would be remotely useful for food or fuel or fiber or medicine, right? And you know what Dave said about his own books? Plants don't read books. Just because that book says this plant blooms in April in your climate doesn't mean it will bloom in April in your climate. You'll have to determine based on things like microclimates, soil types, and an abundance of other things when it is. That's just a starting point. So if a guy that put that amount of effort into it, and Eric, and Dave says this, Eric is the unsung hero of that book set. Because he did the deep-ass academic research. These two guys are extremely talented. They did everything they could to make it perfect, and they are willing to admit it's not perfect. How perfect do you think your Rand McNally fucking 1867 to present United States history fucking book is? It isn't. It isn't. The only books that I would say are almost 100% right are math books, because they have to be, because math can be checked by using math itself. But even methodology, just because the book says this is the best method, doesn't mean that it is. People who follow the expectations of the crowd will do the best in life. That is not true. That is not true. I can't think of someone who is a better example of intelligent and conformist than people like valedictorians and salutatorians of classes. People that graduate number one, number two of their class, whether it's high school, college, and I don't care if it's community college or fucking MIT, Princeton, Yale, Harvard, right? They are very smart. None of those people that do that are dumb, okay? None of them are. And all of them are highly compliant people. Because no matter how smart you are, trust me, you can't be that person without also being willingly compliant. Almost none of them become CEOs. Almost none of them found companies. Very few of them really invent things that transform society. They aid others who invent things that that change society and influence society. So if the smartest person that goes to a big school doesn't do the most that they are capable of by conforming, what chance do you have? What chance do I have? If you look at all of my success, and I'm talking pre-podcast, I'm talking everything. My work with Neil Franklin, one of the top entrepreneurs in the world, Guy won the Branson Award twice. Only person in the world to ever do that. I mean Richard Branson. That's how badass Neil is. And getting to work with a guy like him. And getting in a position to meet a guy like him. All of it was by doing the things you're not supposed to do. Leaving a job when it wore you out instead of being loyal to the company. Me, right? Switching careers in your 30s when you're already banking, well, late 20s, when you're already banking a six-figure income. You don't do that. I did. Not going to college when you're really fucking smart. Hello? Right? We would say, well, that's survivor bias. No, it's observational reality. Because all the people that have these huge success stories, even if they did go to school or whatever, they're always disruptors. They're never conformists. They never live their life the way somebody else says they're supposed to. And when they do happen to live parts of their life the way that other people expect, it's because they wanted to anyway, and they're smart enough not to rebel, just to rebel. So, I really think that following expectations of the crowd is not a key to success in society. Now, being smart about how you rebel, that's up to you. Okay. Next, failure is bad and should always be avoided. This is stupid. Let's go back to the creative types, the people that actually change the world. I don't even remember the number, but it's some impossibly insane number of how many times Edison tried to make a light bulb and it didn't work. And he said, you know, I didn't fail to make a light bulb 1,000 times. I found 1,000 ways not to do it, which led to the one way that I figured out how to do it. By the way, that primitive ass Edison bulb, and I know there's the whole Edison Tesla feud and let it go. I'm talking about just the light bulb, not the power system, right? Those old Edison bulbs, you know, there's some of those old Edison bulbs that are still around. They're over 100 years old and they still fucking work. Let that sink in. Now, failure is not always bad. Failure in a way that you hedge against the results of that failure is a learning experience. You can't learn unless you're wrong. Everything that is worth doing is hard when you've never done it before and requires failure to develop success. I mean, how many of you out there, just think back. I know it's hard to remember how little you really were. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately, too, and it's too late for my grandkids on some levels because they're 9 and 15 now. But I was remembering the other day, and I have no idea what happened to it. When I was in kindergarten, we had an art project. Maybe it was first grade. It was kindergarten, first grade, somewhere around. We made a bowl. We made a bowl out of clay, and then you paint it with glazing, and they throw it in the kiln and that shit like that. But all we did was we made a piece of, you know, clay into like a circle, and we bent our knee. And we put it over our knee and we molded it around our knee. And then we took it off. We built a little base for it and attached it by just pushing the clay together. And then they fired that. And then we glazed it and they refired it. And I remember I was in high school and going through some shit. And I found this thing and it dumbfounded me. It was like putting a thimble, you know, on your hand. Like it just wouldn't even get close to fitting my knee. And in my head, you remember kindergarten a lot better, first grade a lot better when you're in like 11th, 12th grade than you do when you're 50. So that's not that far away from you, right? You're talking 10 years, but less than 10 years, right? You're talking like 8-9 years. And so you think 8-9 years ago, you remember shit pretty well, but you don't remember yourself being that little kid. That's my point. It'd be better, I think, if we all did make things like that, not just so your parents can look at it and go, aw, and your grandparents can go, aw, but so that you yourself can check yourself once in a while. Remember, you were that little incapable retard at one point in your life so that you are better as a mentor for persons that are in that place right now in their life, right? Remember how little you are. So this is hard to really do and really remember and put yourself back to being 5, 6, 7 years old. But I want you to think about like the first time you decide you want to play basketball and you grabbed a basketball and you threw it at the rim and in your little tiny head, that ball is going to sail through there like Michael Jordan did it or, somebody like that. Right. And where'd that ball go? It didn't even touch the freaking net. It was below the net. It hit the ground and rolled away. And you're like, oh, I suck. Right. But you can't do that. You have to keep trying. You develop the skill and the muscles and the coordination. And, you know, maybe they take you to a place with an 8-foot basket for smaller kids, and eventually you can start making shots. But if you became, I don't care how good of a basketball player anybody becomes, they sucked the first time they did it. I have to have this conversation with my granddaughter all the time. She hits any kind of adversity and say, oh, I'm just not going to. Like, you're fantastic at gymnastics. Oh, yes, I am. Okay, great. Yeah, you just won a bunch of freaking medals in your division, right? At the state level. Yes, I did. Okay. Did you not suck the first time you tried to do this stuff? Was it not hard? But since you wanted it, you did it. But how can you become good at something without failing along the way? And the answer is you can't. So unless failure is catastrophic, it's just part of the learning. But we teach people to fear failure, to fear being wrong. Because you know what that leads to? A need for someone to validate your actions by assigning it a grade, or it's okay, or it's really good. You know, I can always tell when somebody brings me something and they're asking me my opinion because they value my opinion as a business person. And when they're bringing me something like a, you know, a website or something, they're asking my opinion of it because they want me to bless it, because it must be right if Jack says so. I really can't help the second type of person because they're in the wrong state of mind. Even if I think it's good, my response to that person is always, well, what do you think? Because until they've actually formed a true opinion and actually analyze it themselves, anything I say is going to rob from them. It's not me. For those of you that things like that have happened to when you've come to me for help, it's not me being a dick. It's me realizing there's things you need to learn that I will take away from you if I do it for you or if I say it for you. Because there might be nothing wrong with it at all. But you have to be willing to fail. How about this? There's always one right answer to any question or problem. That's nonsense. That's back of the book thinking. I don't know what the fuck a textbook's like now, but I know when I was a kid in school, even a math book, what they did in the math books was kind of interesting. What I remember is all the odd numbered questions had an answer and all the even ones didn't. And that way you couldn't cheat on all your homework, but you could figure out where you were wrong and try to work your way through it. That was actually pretty useful. But there was this mindset, if I could find the answer in the book, then it must be right. I think a big part of why I don't think that way, and because of the way I talk about school a lot of the times, you might think that I have bad memories of school. I don't. I'm very lucky, I feel, because the schooling that I got in Florida was, in my opinion, terrible. It was awful. It was so regimented. It was so specifically designed and controlled by the state. And Florida had already started like these like standardized tests. They had a test called the minimum level skills test. And so the teaching was already the way it is now, where they're like teaching to the test. And when I went to Pennsylvania, you know, that's what SATs are for. That was how they looked at that, right? We don't do that. They weren't there yet. And I had these really great teachers, some of them that really seemed to me like they belonged at a much better school, but maybe they were from the area and they just liked living there because it was still a good place to live at the time. And so for whatever reason, they chose to be there. And I had a teacher named Mr. Sakavage. Mr. Sakavage was so freaking good as a teacher and gave out so many A's that he actually had a review done on him. They sent people to audit his class because they thought he was obviously just giving out A's. They sent three professionals to audit his class, and none of them could pass his test because they didn't take his class. They just examined the test initially anyway. Well, how are you testing them? So he showed, and here's how it was. You got these 20 terms at the beginning of a section, right? And then you got 20 terms as you went through the section that would get introduced at various points in time. And he would lecture every day. He was more of a lecture guy than a textbook guy. And at the test for that section would be, you had to match the two from group A and group B, which two go together. Wait a minute. It's not that fucking easy. There were often cases that could be made that this term could go with this term or that term or this term. And as long as you could balance it, but after you matched it, you had to explain the correlation. And he didn't give a shit about capitalization, punctuation, full sentences, all it had. Is it clear what you're saying and does it make fucking sense? And that guy, like 80% of the people in his class got A's because he was a great teacher. He made history real. He made it matter. He put a spin on it to where you could see the relevance to the people in the time that it was happened. It was not Columbus sails the ocean 1492. That is not the kind of correlations that would be there. You know, that's a real education. And that can't come with the idea that the answer is A, the answer is B, the answer is yes, the answer is true. That type of education requires an acknowledgement that there's subtleties and nuances in all things. And I to this day, am grateful I had that man as a teacher, because I think it's a big part of why I've become the systems thinker that I am. So if you ever think I hate school in of itself, I don't. I hate the way we run schools, because the purpose of the system is what it does, and we know what it does. How about this? Working with others helping you is cheating. Working with others helping you is cheating. That's what school teaches. I mean, if you're having a test and four of you put your desks together and say, what do you know? What do I know? Like, I'm really good at this. You're really good at that. Let's break this down. Hey, what do you got for number five? And then you discussed it because there was a disagreement. Maybe you split two and two, and then you discussed it and came to a consensus. And then, like, that's cheating. That's how the fucking real world that you say you're preparing children for fucking works. Isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't that exactly how an office environment works? We're trying to solve a problem. Let's get a meeting. Let's get everybody that knows about this. Bill is really, really good at this form of messaging we're working on. Bill's running this group this time. Tom's really good with creativity. And this is a very image-focused project. So Tom will run the group this time. Isn't that how the real world that they claim they're preparing for works? I get that you can't have that in all situations, because then the lazy freaking kid who can't do anything just rides on everybody else's work. But isn't there, like, I remember a group project once in high school. And that was, dare I say it, what? 35 years ago, 40 years ago, something like that. I don't even want to talk about it, right? Once. We should actually be teaching collab. That's what we should be teaching if we actually cared about the real world. My granddaughter was here last week. My wife went and picked her up from school and brought her here for a couple hours before taking her back to mommy. And she's on like a FaceTime chat. I don't know if it was actually FaceTime, but like a FaceTime type thing with a friend of hers. And they were playing some game, kind of like a scavenger hunt video game or something. And they were coordinating with each other. And at first I'm like, it's just more freaking screenager stuff. And, you know, and then I thought, wait a minute. Actually, what they're doing is exactly what a lot of jobs are and more jobs will be in the future, is remote collaboration, multiple people working toward a goal together. So just like the lion that's chasing the little lion cub chasing a rat, lions don't live on rats, but that cub plays with that rat to learn the skill of hunting. And then the cubs play fight so that when they grow up, they actually know how to fight as a lion so they can defend their pride. All that play is learning for the real world. The animals know how to do it. So do humans. And that play that they're doing today, just a different form of social interaction. It's not like me and my buddies, when we got together IRL, right, in real life, when that was the only way you got together, we were always doing something of some, you know, amazing, high, lofty thing. Sometimes we were doing stupid shit like drinking beer in the woods when we were 15 years old. It's actually probably better that the kids are coordinating online than doing that, except you do learn how to get out of shit when you do that as a kid. I will say that. But working with others isn't cheating. Collaboration is what makes humans what we are. You know, there's animals that you would call collaborative, but they're really not. They're more authoritative, more like the society that the government wants to build. Ants are not collaborative. They're controlled. They're automatons. They're the Borg. The border design, it's why they have a queen. They're designed after like ants and bees and wasps. And the queen itself is really a slave to the whole. Right? It's not necessarily a great thing to be a queen. You'll live longer. They'll feed you, but you have no freedom and no autonomy as a queen. And when you're not useful anymore, they make a new queen and she kills you. Kind of dark and sinister, isn't it? All right. We work together willingly. We collaborate willingly. And I think we're one of the few species that can recognize leaders in different situations. I think we might be the only one. I don't want to say we are the only one because I don't know enough about primates and marine mammals to know if maybe there's some instance of this. I know with primates, there is some with like younger females getting to a point where they're actually allowed to babysit, kind of like humans do. So there is a little bit of that. But humans, we really don't have like all-time alphas in most natural situations. We do what I said earlier. Bill's really good at this thing. Let Bill lead. But this new thing, Bill's not. And honestly, when people are able to not struggle to always be in control, when they're able to be themselves, the person that is not really gifted at the particular agenda knows they're not and is willing to say, I don't think I should lead this, guys. And Sue knows this material way better than me. I think in this instance, Sue should lead. That's, you want to talk about what makes humans a superior species? That and our ability to think ahead and plan for the future based on probability, those two things are it. That's what this giant freaking computer in your bone skull does for you. Those two things. So we should be training that into people. You should be working together. You should be figuring out who the strongest person for this situation is and putting them at the helm for this. And everybody needs a turn at the helm at something because everybody needs how to lead, how to follow, and how to integrate. Like how to be that middle person that is a leader, but they're still not the top leader for that project. Everybody needs to learn all those skills. Can't do it if you sit in your own desk and don't talk to anybody. I mean, aren't these the same people that say, but if they don't go to public school, how will they socialize? And then the first thing when the kid talks to the other kid, they say, we're not here to socialize. We're here to learn. Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sometimes you just listen to what they say and you go, do you even hear yourself when you talk? In the words of Stewie from Family Guy. Your worth is measured by grades and the approval of others with authority. We need to unlearn that. We need to unlearn that. And your worth is also then as you get out of the academic world, it's about how much money you make and what your position is, like what your career is, what your job is. It's impressive. Director of engineering or whatever, you know? And then if you look into it, maybe that guy's job really isn't any different than the guy that doesn't have the title, right? Maybe he didn't even make any more money. Maybe they gave him the title to make him feel good so he wouldn't quit. Who knows? But your worth is not really measurable in grades or certainly the approval of other people. There's a lot of people that think I suck. They have every right to think I suck. They have every right not to listen to me. They have every right to say I suck. Why some of them choose to join us in live streams and talk shit, I don't understand. If I suck that bad, why are you here? But that's fine too. I may not tolerate them at a certain point, but that's okay. I don't need their approval. I don't need the fact that somebody doesn't approve of me doesn't matter to me. What I use to gauge my success is real world feedback. I do things my way and I get the results I'm looking for and I don't hurt anybody. I'm going to keep doing that and improving that method because that works. You're not supposed to start a podcast on a $35 recorder in a car. Not even back in 2008. That wasn't a thing. Nobody did that. So I didn't. And when I started doing it, I had a lot of, you'll never be anything because all that road noise. Don't fucking listen then. I don't care. I didn't ask you when I started this. We'll get to that one in a second, right? I didn't ask for your fucking permission. So I'm not asking for your respect. I don't care. Now, if no one listened, that would have been real. Okay, then I need somebody. If I want to be a public personality, I need somebody's approval. But go find the most famous people in the world, and you can find a million people that say they suck. So if it doesn't work, again, now we're back to somebody that's like a world-class athlete or somebody that's a world-class technician or somebody that's a world-class actor, a world-class musician, and they still have millions of people that say, that person sucks, I don't like them, what chance do you have? Stop trying to please people. Stop trying to please people. That doesn't mean don't be a good husband, don't be a good father, don't be a good son or daughter or brother, right, or a good student. That does not mean that. That means that in your overriding macro arc in life, when you're making decisions about what to do, you should be running them through a filter of, do these things help me attain my short-term goals, and you should know what they are, so that I can meet my midterm goals, so I can continue on a path toward my North Star goal, my overriding arc. Does this move? What does winning look like here? And does that winning help me and advance my cause? Because a lot of times what you'll find is when people disapprove, it will advance you and you should do it. And sometimes when people disapprove, it won't advance you, but it won't hurt you and you're doing it because you like it. As long as it doesn't get in the way, you should still do it. And you'll also find a lot of times the things that please people actually take from you. Don't do that. Now, again, I'm not saying like this is an excuse to be a dirtbag of a father and not provide for your kids. You have to temper this with some common freaking sense. But when it comes to like this idea that like, well, people won't like me, I don't give a shit if you like me. I don't care if you like me. That's not let me put it a different way. If I was such a dick that nobody liked me, that I would care about, right? But if like some segment of people or some group of people or some individual person, I don't like him, that's cool, bro. I don't really care for you either. Sometimes I don't like myself. Have a nice life. I'm going to go back to living my life. Do you know how many people can't do that? That is such a simple thing, but in our world today, because of all this conditioning, that is a superpower. For somebody to say, you suck, bro. Okay, man. And anyway, as I was saying, and just go back to your whatever your thing is. That's nice. And? Got anything else? Okay, bye now. People can't do it. People can't do it. This is a little off of what I'm talking about today, but there's so many things people can't do. I used to do a thing in my sales training, building confidence. I'd say I need someone to volunteer that thinks they'll do whatever I ask them to do, and I'm not going to ask you to take your clothes off or jump out a window or something like that, right? And, you know, a couple hands would go up. And I'd kind of look, and I'd look for the one that I think I can make this point with. Usually I'd find them. And I said, what I want you to do is I want you to stand up and I want you to loudly say, my name is, and I want you to say your full name your way your mom did. So for me, it would be John Samuel Spirico, right? And I don't give a fuck what people think of me. As loud as you can. I want you to be so loud that people in the other room hear you. Do it. About 80% of people couldn't do it. They certainly couldn't do it the first time full-throated. There are people that when everybody laughed and like, okay, I'm in a friendly room, they would finally do it. But about 80% of people couldn't do it out of the gate. What does that say? That we're more concerned with conformity than success. Being well-liked. Again, I don't want to be disliked for being who I don't want to be disliked because people don't understand who I am. That's a different problem. You think something about me that's not true. If you matter in my world, I want you to at least make an informed decision about that. But if somebody doesn't like me for who I actually am, for what I actually think, for what I actually believe, for what I actually do, fuck them. Why should I care? Do they pay my mortgage for me? Do they take care of my wife? Did they raise my children? No? Get fucked. How simple is that? And how many people right now inside you, there's a little thing like, oh, I don't know. Bullshit. Sever that fucking cord, man. Cut it right loose. Memorizing a thing is equal to being educated about a subject. The person that can tell you the list of things and memorize the list of things must be educated. Man, I can do that in spades. And I'm not saying it's not helpful in some ways, but I'll tell you what it takes for me to do that. I have to care a little bit. If I care just a little bit about something, if I want to remember it, a date, a list of things, a definition, I can memorize that. But intelligence is the ability to apply it, not to remember it. There is a value to retention, right? But there's some really, really smart people whose retention is dog shit, but they have good methodology, and what they don't remember, they just look up. And we live in a world where that's easier and easier and faster to do anyway. It's the ability to apply the knowledge that equals intelligence. Knowledge for knowledge's sake is no different than a computer, and not an AI computer, right? Just your computer, you could save but tons of documents and songs and music and all to it. It doesn't mean your computer's smart. It just stores a bunch of information that can be recalled with a proper search string. That's all memorization is in your human brain. Can you apply the knowledge? Can you use two pieces of knowledge that don't seem to be related to each other to form a pattern of recognition and explain the correlation between them the way my teacher taught me in 10th grade? That's intelligence. And that to get a person to that level requires teaching a person how to learn and how to apply knowledge, not teaching a person to be a fucking parrot. Which, by the way, most of you, those salutatorians and valedictorians and top 10 in a graduating class, that's what most of them are. That's why they do well as intelligent conformists. Because when a teacher says, you know, memorize all of the states, they just memorize it in a list and they just make a song or something and, you know, Alaska and Alabama and go in alphabetical order or whatever. But does it matter? Does that matter? Are they ever going to really, I mean, like, I don't know, maybe like in a game show or something, but other than that, does it really matter? Is it something you're really going to apply the knowledge of? Probably not. So we need to get off of this viewpoint that just because people know a bunch of things, they're smart. Do they know how to do something with those things? That's what makes a person smart. You know what China's doing? Not that I usually point to China as an example, but sometimes they get it right. China's revamping their entire approach to PhDs. You know, they're in a society with over 1 billion people, and it's close to 2 billion, at least that's what they say. You're going to have a lot of PhDs running around, especially a communist country that if you're smart enough, you just go to school. Well, okay. So you got all these PhDs, and PhDs have always said what? Grad students, publish or perish. So a PhD's grand opus is they write something. Do a research project, but they publish a document. And I think in some places that may be necessary still for PhD level work. Because I'm not shitting on all of it, right? Like if you're a psychologist and a damn good one and a PhD, you're not going to invent a thing, a widget, a device. But there's a lot of areas of being a PhD, including like biotechnology and stuff like that, or biology. Like, we need stuff to do more work with. They're actually moving a lot of their PhD programs to where you have to invent something to be awarded the PhD credential, not publish a thing. Because how many people have we found out recently, their published, you know, doctoral thesis or whatever, was a forgery? And just because you can write something doesn't mean you can do it. I can make up all kinds of bullshit that I can't do. So we need to get off of that. We need to unlearn that. Memorizing a thing is useful, but it's only as useful as you make it and you apply it. Which means you'll find that once you realize that, there's a lot of shit that people expect you to memorize that you won't. Like, I'm not wasting my time on that. I can't see a world where I'll ever need that information in real time with no ability to look it up, and I don't give a fuck about it, and I don't do that, and I don't plan on doing that, so I'm out. You don't know what you... Yeah, I do. I'm 53. Soon to be 54. I know what I'm not going to do with my life at this point. I understand that when somebody's 15, they don't know that, but there's a lot of bullshit that we know we're lying to them when we say they're going to use it someday. We know they're never going to. Wait to be chosen for things, positions and opportunities. No, right? The person that you see is overly motivated. The person that's always pushing, that's always asking for the opportunity, the person that you kind of find is just being that kind of annoying person, they're going to advance faster than you. Now, you can't be Horseshack, ooh, 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 Mr. Kata, right? You can't be that, right? But you need to be the person, like if you're going to build a career and you're in some sort of office environment, you know, especially once you've kind of got off the bottom level, you're not an intern anymore, you're not an entry-level puke anymore, you at least have moved up one rung in the system, There's going to be a corporate culture. There's going to be a path to advancement. And your supervisor needs to know that you want to walk that path. And that you see your role is making sure they look good while you advance your own career. And to do things in such a way where their boss never comes to them with your name in their mouth in a bad way. They need to know that. They need to know that you're looking to develop as a leader and that you're looking for mentorship and you're looking for challenge and you're looking for opportunity. And you're already the guy saying, the next time there's an opportunity, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. Because if you don't, somebody else will. Somebody else will. Do you know how many people get promotions, get leadership opportunities, get next level because they asked for it? A lot of them. A lot of them. Don't think your work speaks for itself. Let your work speak for itself, but also advocate for yourself at the same time. Don't admit that you don't know things you are expected to know. We need to unlearn that. And that one sounds a little weird. It's like a triple negative or some shit, right? Don't admit that you don't know things you are expected to know. Basically, hide the fact that you do not know the answer. And I mean, nobody likes to be in a position where you really are supposed to know something, you know, and that sergeant says, what's your second general order? And you don't know it, just as an example. But you look dumber trying to pretend you know a thing than to admit you don't know it. Do you know? And a lot of times it's not that. I get when you're being put back on your heels trying to come up with some kind of an answer. But most of the time people do this, you know, you're back in that office environment or some kind of collaborative work environment, right? Do you know what this means? Yeah. And you look at the person and go, no, you don't. What? There's no shame in not knowing a thing you haven't learned yet, right? No, I don't know what that means. Oh, it means that, you know, I remember one time I was doing a meeting and had all my guys in there and I said something about cogs. And I looked over at a guy that was kind of new to the group and said, do you know what that means? He goes, yeah. I went, tell me what it means. And he finally fessed up. I said, don't do that. And I told him what it means. It means cost of goods sold. And then, like, all of a sudden, all the shit I'd been running my mouth about, you could see, like, the light and the light come on. He was afraid to ask. It was fortunate that I was able to determine he didn't know what I was talking. I could tell something was wrong. It wasn't so much the way he acted when I asked him if he knew what it meant. It was what he looked like before I asked that told me there was something, like, there was a, like, he's trying to connect. He's a good guy. He's trying to connect the two things. They weren't going together. You have to be honest about what you don't know. Why do they have a fucking expert council? I never market myself as an expert. Sometimes people call me one. I always cringe when they do. I'm just a guy that knows a bunch of shit about a bunch of things. I don't know if I'm an expert in anything. Most polymaths aren't. But yeah, you have to admit what you don't know because you can't learn. Now, I will tell you that if somebody uses a term and it doesn't come up, and you don't know what it is, there's another type of not admitting that you don't know. And it's the worst kind of lie you can tell. It's a lie to yourself. As bad as lying is, the most destructive form of lying is when we lie to ourselves. So when we pretend we know a thing, and then we're just like, yeah, I know it. And we, you know, what I'm saying is that guy, had I not picked up on that, the smartest thing he could have done the minute we were done with that meeting is go to his computer and type in COGS, C-O-G-S. What does that mean? And figured it out. And maybe had to do some, I'm sure there's other ways it's an acronym, right? Like find, or a mnemonic. Like there's probably some other way that you can use that term. I find that often when I'll hear somebody use a term that I, or internet shorthand or something, there's multiple, and I have to use the context to figure out which one it is. So if you're not honest with yourself about what you don't know or what you're not good at or where you're weak, you won't fix that. So this permeates your whole life. Another one is everyone is equal and qualifies for your time and attention at the same level. We're taught this when everybody should share. Everybody's the same. Everybody's equal. No, they're not. And what a horrible society we would live in if everybody was equal. Well, egalitarianism is good with basic human rights, but not everybody is equal. Not everybody is equally valuable to an organization. I am not valuable at all to the Dallas Cowboys. The water boy is more valuable to the Dallas Cowboys than Jack Spirko is. I don't give a fuck about the Dallas Cowboys, right? But you don't think the starting quarterback, whoever that is now, is it more valuable to the Dallas Cowboys than the water boy? Well, what we really mean is they're equally valuable as humans. What does that even fucking mean? I mean, I know it sounds good, but what does that even fucking mean? Everybody's real, like, being a human is not valuable in of itself. Do you not, can you not right now think of some people in your head that would do well to go through a wood chipper because of who and what they are? Okay, are they valuable as a human? Well, not them. But then everyone is equal? No. Equality is a myth used to control you. There is no equality. And there is no person that isn't superior to some other person in some way. And there's no person that isn't inferior to other people in some ways. So I might be a way better podcaster than a lot of people. And I might be a better teacher than a lot of people, but there's probably a lot better teachers than me. And I'm more, that's why this form of education works better for me. I'm much better as a personality than in the classroom. So there's definitely people that are better classroom teachers than I am, right? I could be a really good computer person. I always mock myself, but I'm pretty technical and I'm pretty fast with the things I know how to do, but I only know how to do the things that I need to do or want to do. Anything else, I pay somebody to do it. Why? Because I don't want to put my time and effort there. So clearly those people are better at it than me, even if I could be better. I'm not. Chosen not to be. Chosen not to put in the work and the time to become better at those things. Right? Not everybody's equal. I'm not as good of a basketball player as LeBron James, and there's nothing I could have done in my life if I started when I was 2 years old to be anywhere near as good. He's got a natural talent, and he's really fucking tall. Yeah? See how simple this is? We're not equal. Never base anything on the concept that everybody's equal or the same, because they're not. In the most homogenous group possible, there is superiority and inferiority in 1,000 dimensions in between those people. One guy's a 10 at this, and the other guy's a 0 at it. And then in something else, the 0 is a 10, and the 10 is a 0. You can't manage people. You can't manage systems. You can't design systems if you look at everybody as equal. If I'm designing something is divergent from what it seems like we're talking about is a permaculture system in a backyard, and I think everybody's equal, and my last client, when he said he would water the stuff once every other day all summer long with a system that involved him going out and looking at it like I do, because I think that's a better way for me, and he did it, and then I said, well, everybody will do it, and I interview my next client, and I don't dig deep enough, and I don't automate his irrigation, all his shit dies. See what I mean? That's real world. You'll never read that in a fucking book, I guess, unless I wrote it. Or somebody like me wrote it. There's not many of us out there that think this way. Because we're trained not to think this way. How about avoid taking risks? That's not just school, man. I remember back when I bought the Arkansas house. And this is before I was doing the podcast. I had a house in Arlington where I lived when I started this show. But before I started the show, quite a few years, I had an opportunity turn up that my niece and her husband got a job offer in Hot Springs, and I'd already been looking at real estate up there, and I'd already thought about buying a place up there. And when they said that, I'm like, are y'all going to buy or rent? And they're like, well, we're going to rent. And I said, what if I came up there, did some house shopping, and if I find something that works for you at a price you can afford, I'll buy the house and rent it to you at cost because you're family. Just pay me on time and don't fuck it up. And they said yes. So I went up there and I did that. And I bought a house. And I bought a house for the price today of like a fully loaded SUV, like well under $100,000. And I remember my brother-in-law, who I really like and really respect, by the way, telling me that's kind of risky. He had just bought one of them really overpriced SUVs. And I'm like, so I financed an appreciating asset at a low interest rate with somebody else making at least a few years of the payments for me. And now I own another piece of real estate that I can easily sell in the future for more than I paid for it, or borrow against it in the future and buy another piece of real estate. And that's a risk. But you buying a vehicle that will depreciate in value with a payment, by the way, that's higher than my mortgage payment is not a risk. That's just what everybody does. Now, I didn't say that because I value the man as a family member and a friend, but that's what went through my head immediately. Like, you don't even, and to be fair, he had never come at it that way. He had never thought about that. I would much rather spend $100,000 on a second piece of real estate than spend $100,000 on an appreciating vehicle. And when you think about it just that way, and that's all you think about, it becomes really clear. And then you say, since I don't need the other piece of real estate, I can rent it to somebody. Somebody else can buy it for me. And if it hadn't been family, like I could have easily rented that place for at least $300 more than my payment on it. Easy. I can have another almost $4,000 in cash flow a year. Then, by the way, I'll pay almost no tax on because I'm going to depreciate the property against it. But that's a risk. So when we start out from the standpoint of be careful of things that are risky, don't take risks. The problem is not just that we don't take risks. We never evaluate the thing as soon as we determine it's risky. Oh, that's danger. Like, you know, there's a place to use caution. You see a big place, like with a bunch of wires and shit, and it sounds like this. And there's a big skull and crossbones on it, right? And there's a big lightning bolt and a dude getting fried and it says, danger, stay away. Yeah, even if you speak Spanish, it says peligro, right? Like, yeah, stay the fuck. Okay, that is a bad risk. There's no reward, and the consequences are death. Right? Okay? How many things in life that really advance your life come with zero risk? The answer is almost zero. I added the almost, because somebody's going to think of one. And sometimes, like, I look at things and go, there's nothing to lose, and you're not doing it, so why aren't you doing it? So there are some things kind of like that. They make your life better, and there's really no risk to them, and people still don't do them. But most people will try to find a risk even where one isn't. You can't think this way. But the avoidance of risk has never made anybody successful in life. The mitigation of risk, good risk analysis, those are hallmarks of highly successful people. You know, putting in a hedge, right? So that if it fails, there's a backstop, like a stock trade? Sure. Fully understanding the risk before you take it? Absolutely. Avoid the risk, period. Bad news. Bad news. That's the person that works for a company for 30 years and is shocked when right before they're supposed to get their pension, they get let out the door. The person that takes risk ends up leaving that company long before that and building their own or doing something else, building a book of business as a consultant, whatever it is. They always will have the person who can analyze and mitigate but successfully take risk will always outperform the person that's fully risk averse. Always. All right. How about equality is possible and equity is noble and virtuous? That equality is even possible. We kind of hit on that already. Equality is not possible. You and I, and I know I'm talking to lots of people right now, you and I are not equal, right? And as I said earlier, that doesn't mean I'm better than you or that you're better than me. In many ways, I am better than you. And in many ways, you are better than me. And I'm talking to everybody that hears this right now. That applies. That's the equality across the grade. We are all inferior and superior to each other, depending on how we judge that. I guarantee you, the person who I can beat in every physical conflict may be more compassionate than me, and probably is. Probably is. The person that I can always outthink may be physically superior to me in a variety of ways. There's no way. And even the bullshit that we try to spew with like the Constitution and we're all equal under the law is a lie. Two people were mostly the same. White dude with a beard, just like me, 53 years of old, no criminal record. One guy's dead broke. The other guy has resources. We both get accused of a crime we didn't commit, but the evidence is pretty damning, at least circumstantially. And a case can be made that we're guilty, and we are indicted, and we're going to face charges. One can afford a really good attorney. The other one gets a public defender. That's equal? Get the fuck out of here. It's not equal. It's inherently unequal. And the person who built their net worth has a right to obtain better quality representation. Anybody tells you otherwise, the purpose of the system is what it does, not what it purports to do. And that's the end of it, right? But equity is the big one. And that's the one that's become even more bullshit now. Equality at least has a noble goal. Everybody has the same opportunity. Now they don't. I don't have the same opportunity to be a professional basketball player as a 6'6" black dude who's highly athletic, because I'm a 5'10" white dude with Ukrainian big stumpy legs. I'll kick your liver out of your back, but don't expect me to run worth a fuck. Okay? I'm not built for that. So we're not going to have equity. We're not going to be treated the same, because we shouldn't be. We're not. Equity is when the outcomes are the same for everybody. Everybody gets paid the same. That would be equity. You can't run a sports team that way. Why? Because it is not reasonable that the third string lineman be paid as well as the starting quarterback under any scenario. That doesn't make any sense. And if it doesn't make sense there, it doesn't make sense anywhere. Equity is bullshit. It's just it's a lie. At least equality has a noble intent. Equity doesn't even have that. It's just deceit. It's not possible. There's no world that it works. There's no world that it becomes sustainable in. How about focus and work the hardest on your weaknesses? Well, that can't be wrong. We should all want to be better at the things we're weak at. No. No. That's dumb. You know what I do with the things I'm weakest at? I hire people to do those things for me. Or I develop my life and my career and my entirety of my existence around not having to do that thing. If I'm not good at being compassionate to people who are whining and crying in their life and they don't need a hammer like me, I don't help that person. I've literally had people in this community go, can you talk to so-and-so? And I know so-and-so, and I know what so-and-so is like, and I know they don't need a hammer. And I've said, no, I won't. I can't. I won't do it. All right? Because I'm weak at that level of like, I don't have 4 hours to talk about your fucking feelings with you. When I can see your problem and I know what you need to do to dig out of the hole that you're in, that's all I want to talk about. And that person might need the person that puts them on the psychiatry couch and listens to them run their fucking mouth for 4 fucking hours before they convince them that it was their idea to do the thing. They might need that. See, I'm weak that way. I'm not saying my way's better. I'm saying my way's my way. That's how I am. Oh, you're fucking up. Stop fucking up and you won't be fucking up no more. We don't need to talk about this. I don't give a shit how you feel about it. I don't care. And some people, that is perfect for it. That's exactly what they need. They need somebody to say, listen, Bill, what the fuck are you doing? Quit fucking around. There is no tomorrow, Bill. Get on it now. That's what you're going to get from me. I am not going to work on being more compassionate that way anyway. my compassion is, right, this is my version of compassion for that situation, being able to shut the fuck up, understand that I'm not the right person for that, and clearly state it, and send them to somebody else for help or send somebody else to help them, right? That's falling back to halfway on the weakness and fixing that as a backstop. That's not if I try to become that person, it literally takes away from everything that I am. I don't manage my life that way. So why would I see? That's the thing. Like whenever you get advice from me, when you say, well, what gun should I get? And I happen to like have a gun for the purpose you're asking about. The first thing I say is the one I have, because anything else would be disingenuous. I mean, literally, with some exceptions, like, you know, some super expensive, you know, collector's weapon or something that belonged to Bill Cody or something. I don't know. Like something like that, maybe I can't have. But when it comes to like a gun that's made right now for deer hunting, there isn't one I can't go buy if I want it. Even if I sell three other ones, I can have whatever I want. So if what I have is for the purpose you asked about, even if I say there's some other good options that might be better for you, I'm going to start with what I have because it's real. And I can speak to it with authenticity. So if you ask me how to fix your problem, and the way I would fix your problem is quit being a fucking bitch, stand up and go fix your fucking problem. And I say, well, let's talk about it. I'm not being sincere. I'm being fake. And I have two choices then. I either become that person that I don't want to be, or I stay fake. So I'm not going to work on my weaknesses. I'm blind in one eye. How do I fix that? There's probably some exercise I could do to improve my vision a few lines. It won't make the problem go away. I'll still be legally blind. I'm not going to work on that. Right? I'm not saying not to work on any of your weaknesses. I'm saying don't give weaknesses by default priority on what you work on. What you should work on is your strengths. Work on your strengths, improve your strengths, take your moderates, turn them into strengths, and hire out tasks, design out your weaknesses. This is what effective people do. When you look at like captains of industry and all, they all have shit they're terrible at. That's why they hire people to do those things. They all have things they could do, but it bores them. So they hire people to do those things. Somebody asked Henry Ford one time, you know, you're rich as shit. You're incredibly successful. Never been to college. You ever think about these like auditing classes or whatever, and eventually getting a degree, even if you do it very part-time or something? Something like that was the direction of the question. This is around 1913, 1914, somewhere in that range. And he said, why would I do that? I have hundreds of people with college degrees that work for me. That's the mindset. Why do I need to do this better when there are people that are great at it? I'll hire them to do that, and I'll put all my time and effort into things I'm actually naturally talented at and that are part of my passion. That's like, see, but what happens if you start teaching that in school? Well, I don't really give a shit about this other thing, so why don't I hire Bill to do that, and I'll do this that I'm really good at? We have to completely transform education for this shit to work, right? That means maybe we should. School equals education. This is like health insurance equals healthcare. This is the same pattern, right? Well, he's highly educated. Why? He went to school. Doesn't mean shit. The word education and the word school should be separated completely. School is a training mechanism, and it can be a form of education. But it is not education in and of itself, because it's always constrained within the goals and agendas of the organization and the people running it. True education has to be self-led, even if there's a teacher involved, even if there's a mentor involved, even if there's a course involved, even if there's a grade at the end of the tunnel, even if there's a certification at the end of a tunnel. It still has to be student-led, self-directed, or it's not education, it's memorization and training. So school does not equal education, just like health insurance doesn't equal healthcare. You notice they play that little trick? Like, because you're educated the way that we're talking about not being educated today. That's why it works on you, right? And what I mean is we need to make sure that people have access to healthcare. Everybody has fucking access to healthcare right now. May not be the one they want, but there's no such thing as a lack of access to healthcare. It doesn't exist. I guess if you're tied to a tree in the middle of the woods, then you qualify. But I, like, for normal everyday fucking people, that's not a thing. And well, that means we need universal health care. No, what you mean is universal health insurance, which means everybody gets the same care. And since equity and equality are not the same thing, that's probably not a fucking good thing. Right? When we say you have car insurance, we don't say we have car care. We don't say we have car maintenance, right? Imagine, I don't know if Humble's still here. If you're still here, Humble, like, let us know. Sound off, right? Just tell me, what would you tell a person that says, oh, I don't need oil change, I have car insurance, right? One is maintenance, the other is insurance. And some of the things that might be maintenance-like might be covered by insurance, but insurance is insurance and care is care. They're different things. Just like school is one thing and education is another. And if education happens at school, that's great. But one does not by default equal the other, and often they do not. How about conforming to the group consensus is the formula for success? You've heard this as just go along with it, right? Don't make waves. Why do you always have to be the one that wants to do something different? Because you're an independent thinker. Now, there is a place to shut up. If you work for me, and I've heard everybody's idea about what we're going to do going forward, and I say I've considered everything everybody said, and I've made a decision, and this is what we're doing, that's when you shut up. But when the floor is open for discussion, please be heard. I want to hear you. And the biggest problem we have is this conformity, and not just in professional situations. The whole COVID era was a economic and social and educational disaster unlike anything a living human has ever seen. I'm going to say unlike ever happened. Unlike anything a living human has ever seen. It's the most disruptive event in the life of people in the modern world that anybody's been alive to see. I guess there's some people that are still around that were here during the Great Depression, and that might rival it in some really serious ways because you weren't sitting around ordering DoorDash and getting government STEMI checks during that. But those people that are still around from that day and age, you know, they were like five when that shit was going on. So they don't, when you talk about mainstream full on memory, nothing's been more disruptive than that. It was not caused by a virus. I'm not saying the virus wasn't here. One said it wasn't real. I'm not saying it didn't fuck some people up really bad and kill some people. I'm not saying any of that. I'm not saying it was a scam that it existed. Right? I'm saying what it was is what it was. And it wasn't, when we look at it, society as a whole, it wasn't a ripple in the fabric of humanity if it was left to itself. Yes, it would have killed some people, just like lots of things kill some people every year. And it's a shame that it happens, but that's all it was. If we had done nothing, absolutely nothing, we would not have had billions of people laying dead all over the world. About the same number of people would have passed away. Maybe we saved a few. Maybe we cost a lot. I don't know. But it wouldn't have been that big of a difference. But we wouldn't have children regress 2 years in their education. As bad as school is, at least it does teach reading and writing and math, right, to some degree. And that we have higher illiteracy now than we have ever had in our history as a country. Well, in our modern history, anyway. But it was conform. You said it's the government. It's the government. It's the government. But the funny thing is, the government never really decided, hey, we'll just let everything go back to normal. Slowly, in pockets and places, the rebels, the renegades, the pioneers, the agitators, us, said no. We're not doing that. And as we were fought and we were hated and we were cursed out, blamed for things we couldn't possibly be responsible for. I had a person legit tell me, I am the reason her grandma died in Washington State. I won't even get into the scenario because it doesn't matter because I was in Texas. It's not possible. That's how warped the brain was. But what made the government capable of doing this was what? Conformity. A willingness of people to listen to stupid shit and to do it. Put a mask on, take the mask off, put the mask back on, take the mask off, put two masks on, stay 6 meters apart. Like, It was like a bad game of Simon Says, and most everybody went along with it. I think literally if they would have came out and said, we figured out how to stop the spread of COVID, we can all go back to work and everything, you just have to walk around with your left thumb in your asshole. I'm not saying 80% of people would have done it like did all the other dumb shit, but I'm telling you there would have been some people doing it. There would have been some people doing it. It would have happened. That's how, so when people said no, and what happened was it slowly spread. There were the states that clamped down less than the countries that clamped down less, and that's where the rebellious like me, we had the greatest impact the quickest. But then that spread, and then that's what the real spread was. That was the spread they were trying to control, was independent thinking. And so as soon as people quit conforming, all of a sudden the emergency was over. Isn't that funny? I remember covering a story from some beach in California where the local officials had shut the beach down. Eventually, all the people said, you know what? Fuck that. We're going to the beach. You can arrest, go, you arrest us all then, asshole. Good luck with that, right? I'm going to the beach. Well, you know, when they did that, I remember that the mayor of that town and somewhere in Southern California, down near Santa Barbara, I don't know, all the way south. What is it? San Jose is what it is. Okay. Somewhere down in that area said people don't want to be governed this way anymore. I remember reading that story online back during that time period. Like, we're not going to do it anymore because if people have decided, that's what happened. When the nonconformity ended, the bullshit edicts ended. When they realized we can tell them to do it, they're not going to do it. That's when it stopped. That's when they like, we're reopening. Oh, gee, that's nice. We already did. We'll see you when you get here. Join us. It's nice. Then ask permission before you do something. Ask permission before you start. You have to ask permission. Raise your hand and ask permission, Johnny. Yeah, if you're in fifth grade and you need to go to the bathroom or whatever, yeah, you got to raise your hand and ask to go. But that's not what I'm talking about. That's how they, when it comes to this asking permission thing, it is the number one way people talk themselves out of action. It's another version of, remember we talked about long, long time ago, the toolbox fallacy. I want to do this, but first I need that. And until I have that, I can't do this. And I can't buy that yet, so I can't do this, so I'm not going to do it. That's the short version of toolbox fallacy. If you want to know more about toolbox fallacy, go to survivalpodcast.com. Use the search function for toolbox fallacy. There's two shows I did dedicated to it. But we have this idea that like we have to ask permission. And okay, there are certain things that you have to look at the risk reward ratio we talked about earlier. When you take risks, you have to do a risk analysis. And if I do this thing and I get caught doing this thing, they're going to put me in prison for 5 years. Yeah, don't do that. Right? Or if you need a permit and the consequences, they'll put you in prison for 5 years. Go try to get the permit. If you can't get the permit, don't do that. Do something else instead. Right? So I'm not talking about like completely ignoring all authority. Right? What I'm talking about is, what's the risk? What is the risk? And do I need anybody's permission? Because sometimes there's none. So a lot of times when people say they need permission, what they mean is, I want to do this thing, so I need to get the certification first. But is there any legal requirement for that? Or do you need to be good at the thing? And does the certification make you good at the thing? Or is going to learn how to do the thing make you good at the thing? So go do it. Do it in a small way and then keep doing it a little bit bigger and bigger and bigger way so you get really good at it, and then you can do it full time, right? Or you can do it all out or whatever it is your goal is. But there's so much of this concept of permission that it's not even the person thinks they need a certification or something. There is this weird internal locking mechanism that feels like until somebody says you're good enough, you're not. That need for validation, that give me an A on the paper and then I'll know I'm a good boy mindset that's programmed in you. You don't need permission to do most of the things that you want to do in the world. And there's even times where technically there's a thing that says you're not allowed to do it. But I always ask the question, but what happens if I don't? Or if I'm going to do a thing, you're supposed to do this other thing first. Well, what happens if I do it? What's the worst thing that can happen? And a lot of times the answer is something like, well, you know, if they catch you doing that, they'll give you a fine. Well, how much is the fine? Well, like, if you got caught the first offense, it'd be like maximum $500. But this thing's going to make me $100,000 a week. Huh. Maybe I don't give a shit that I'm not supposed to do it. Right? Maybe I don't care. But again, there's a lot of times that what we mean when we say you need permission is it's just somebody else tells you that it's okay to do. Always act aggressively towards your goals as long as you've done a risk analysis first. Don't ask for permission, especially in companies. Right? Especially if, like, what's the worst that's going to happen if you do up a proposal for an initiative that you weren't asked to do at work? Like, you see something that could be done and you take the time, maybe now, especially with something, a tool like Google Gemini, you go have a long discussion with Gemini and then you copy that discussion, you switch over to Deep Think or whatever the fuck they call it, and you get it to do a report and you puts that report out as a proposal, and then you take that and you drop it into a document and you massage it because you can move much faster now doing this. And you put together a whole freaking agenda of things that could be done to further your company's goals or your division's goals or product goals for product set or whatever. And you take that to your supervisor and say, I put this together in my spare time. The worst thing that happens is they're not going to use it. Oh, I did all that work for nothing. Have fun staying fucking poor if you think that way. That kind of mindset disgusts me. There's a lot of things that anger me. There's very few things that disgust me. But when somebody uses that level of loser fucking language, if you took the time to learn how to develop an initiative like that and somebody else didn't use it, you wasted your time and you didn't get anything out of it. You didn't get a fucking education. You didn't get an education in like how to do it and the market itself. You got that, right? Okay. But the other thing you got is a signal. Either what you did was not sufficient for your company, wrong for your company, you got it wrong in some way, and that's okay because they didn't pay you to do it. They're not going to be mad, right? Or it was good, and there's no place for you to move up. Now you know that. You got that out of it, so now you can go take that talent and shit to somebody else because have fun staying poor otherwise. The person that thinks that way, that uses that loser fucking language, the person that you tell, like, hey, look, you're a salesman. What do you make on an average close? $2,500? Yeah, bro, how much time a day do you spend cold calling? 2.5 hours? Yeah, go hire somebody out of your own pocket to do that for you. Well, that'll cost me money. Get the fuck out of here. I'm done. I don't want to fucking talk to you. I don't want to talk to you at that point. I'm disgusted with your existence, and you wasted my time by speaking to me. I know that sounds arrogant. It's not. It's just the truth. I can't help that person. That person needs the couch and the psychologist and the massage and all the lovey-dovey shit to help them over 4 fucking years figure out themselves and what they really want in their life and how their navel fits into the universe and everything else. I want the person ready to go. That's my strength. So I can't countenance that loser fucking language when people talk that way. Next is success is linear. This is something we've been taught to believe. We think in ranks, even in non-rank situations. We think in hierarchy, and we think in direct progression of success. So a person comes in at the bottom. That generally is true, unless they can lateral over from something where you have enough applicable to get a little above the bottom. But a person starts out at the bottom at some point in their career. But then they move up to like a level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5, level 6, level 7, level 8, right? You go in as a private, you become a private first class, you become a specialist or a corporal, you become a sergeant, you become a staff sergeant, right? You become a sergeant first class, become a master sergeant, become a sergeant major. Go in as a lieutenant, become a, you know, second lieutenant, becomes a first lieutenant, becomes a captain, become, like, we think that way. And in those systems, that is exactly how success works. Period. But, and in a lot of government jobs, I mean, literally there's government jobs where you're like a GS-9 or a GS-10 or a GS-12 or whatever. Yeah. Okay. That is a linear progression path. But unless you've actually joined the military and you can't leave, success is what you make it. Success is going from a low level sales position in structured cabling to a regional vice president of sales for a $500 million company in 2 years. That's not linear. That's what I did because I didn't believe in linear. I believe that success, when done properly, is exponential. if you look at every single person that really kills it in the world of business or in some form, it could be sports, it could be notoriety, like anybody that kills it, their success looks like this. It goes up, like goes linear, and then it goes boom. There's an inflection point where it just arcs. It just turns straight up almost 90 degrees. And so when you come at it with, well, I'll get there, and you don't force yourself to look for that inflection point, to look for that killer opportunity, and you stay linear, you'll be linear. And the problem with linear is there's always more people at the bottom than the top. Everything is really a pyramid, okay? It's a very strong foundation of corporation, organization, military group, whatever, to have that large number of privates, a certain number of like the E4 mafia, then kind of your NCOs, your top NCOs, and then your brass, right? That works for that organizational structure. But it doesn't work for people who become truly exceptional. Even people in those organizations, they still have an inflection point. It's just mitigated a little bit. If you don't seek it, because there's always more at the bottom than the top, as you move toward the top, they talk about the women with the glass ceiling. The glass ceiling is, to break the glass ceiling, you have to be better than everybody around you. And the glass ceiling applies to everybody, not just women. How many people can I piss off today, right? With true statements that they'll get angry about. As you're moving up in that world, if you're not striving for an inflection point, you will hit a point where you stagnate. And you'll never go beyond that point, or it'll take you a very long time to get one level above that. And about that time, you're looking at your life and going, it's about time to ride off into sunset and retire. That's linear progression. That's linear success. Success is not linear when success is true success. It always has inflection points. It always has an exponential curve at some point. Because as you build, it's like, you know, as you build momentum, it's that snowball rolling down the hill starts out little bitty. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And the bigger it gets, the faster it grows. That's what success should look like. They didn't teach you that in school, did they? My final thoughts on this is you can't remove these things from a system that requires them to exist. Everything I told you you have to unlearn is also true at the same time. There's a place where it works. There's a place where it fits. There's an expectation of it from society, an expectation of it from reality. Being a nonconformist is only as good as you make it. There's a place for even the most nonconformist to conform. There's time for even the person who thinks outside the box to give the inside the box answer. There's times to not have the fight because you're not going to win it, to be a stoic and a student of history. And understand, in the words of Sun Tzu, that the wise warrior always chooses the terrain of battle. And when the terrain's wrong, just don't fight. Everything that I just spent 2 hours telling you to unlearn, you also need to remember. You need to remember that it's the way the system works. It's the way society works. It's the way the majority of people work. Because if you want to be a good infiltrator, right? This is number one. Think about being a spy. If you want to go spy on North Korea, inside North Korea, and risk being executed if you're caught, the first thing you might want to be is a Korean. And you probably want to speak the Korean language, and you probably want to speak it with the idioms that are unique to the North Korean region that you'll be in, and have a good cover story, and you'll probably want to act like a North Korean is supposed to act, so you'll probably have to know what that is. Only then can you actually be subversive and accomplish your real goal. It's not the same, but it's the same but different man, okay? All these things, you need to know how to buck that system, but you need to accept that that is the system. And that is where you find the leverage points, and that's where you make your successes, and that's where you go from linear to logarithmic exponential success. Anyway, with that, we've wrapped things up. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We do have a few questions. I might have missed some. Things were going pretty fast at one point in the discussion. I'm scrolling through right now just to see if I see any all caps I missed, and there's just way too many. So I'm going to switch over. I got three questions. They are from Sam Williams, Robin Holstein and Second Light Farm. If you have a question or a comment for me and you did not hear your name, like, you know, Miss Judy in the Magic Mirror, I see Sam and Robin and Second Light, but I don't see anybody else. So you need to put your hand up and go ahead and make a comment now, and I'll come back to it as we wrap up. Sam says, comment, credentials. You now have, I'm reading Robin's. That's the problem. Question, humble mechanic, what would I need to program a 2013 Nissan transmission? I told you to put the words in there because I never see it. Yeah, obviously I can't answer that question. So that was for humble mechanic. You didn't need to do that for him, I don't think, dude, because he's not podcasting, but maybe he gave you an answer. I hope he did. Robin says, comment, credentials. You now have tools, ladies, to do anything except figure out how to get a real ID so you can vote. Okay. A little backhanded attack from Robin there. She's talking about the SAVE Act. And they're telling women that they won't be able to vote because they have a different last name now, right? and the credentials, I get it, because women in general are more educated than men in the United States today. If you judge it just from education, as in schooling, more women go to college, more women graduate college, and more women have advanced degrees, right? But despite all those credentials, they can't work how to get real ID or a passport or register to vote in their married name. Okay. Second, of course they can. That's kind of the point, really. Second Light says, I think you might need to do a whole episode on understanding your strengths and weaknesses. Seems like that's a topic right for discussion. Bro, good suggestion. Good suggestion. I'll definitely consider doing that. I'm always looking for topic suggestions. And if you can't tell, I actually really like shows like this. That's why they end up being 2 hours plus. Without like a bunch of slide decks and they just kind of riffing on this stuff. That's a good one. If you have anything though you'd like to hear, it doesn't have to be like this. It can be how to grow food. It can be a specific type of livestock management or whatever. Email me, man. Jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, TSPC in the subject line. Say, Jack, maybe you should do a show on fill in the blank. Don't put fill in the blank. I won't pay attention. I don't know who Phil is. Don't know any Phils. and please, just like when I ask you to do questions, please be brief. You want to give me a bunch of details and tell about your life and how it applies to you and everything? That's fine. Do it after the request. Question, show topic request, that can all be done in one sentence, two max. And then you know what you're asking, and I know what you're asking, and I can figure out whether or not I can do it for you or not. And if I can't, after all these years, I probably have someone in my Rolodex, right? I don't have a Rolodex, but I'm old, so I still use the term. Like somebody in my contact list, I can reach out and say, hey, man, somebody asked me to do a show on blah, 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 blah. And I don't know enough about to do a standalone, and I'll invite that person, and we'll do it, man. I built this show largely by responding to requests. And I think as it got really big, there was a point where people started to think, like, if I email Jack and say, hey, man, what about doing a show about this or that? Like, he's not even going to read it. He's busy. He's reading like 1,000 emails a day. Sure, but I still read them. And the ones that are insightful and brief and specific and interesting, I act on them. Send it in, man. And I'll tell you something else. We need some interviews. I kicked back a bunch of interviews. At the beginning of the year, Flood came in, and there was something I'm not bringing that person on the show or whatever. We're almost out of interviews right now. Our interview tomorrow is going to be pretty late, by the way, about 3 PM Central Time, because the person is in Australia. And so we're accounting for the time change for them so they don't have to be up at 3:00 in the morning or whatever. But if you want to be on the air, I keep getting, and I've had so many people in the last 3 weeks. What is wrong with you people? Send me an email. Jack, I'd like to be on the show, and I'd like to talk about blah, 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 blah. I'm like, fill out the form. No form comes. Don't fill out the form. Don't get on the show. Go to thesurvivalpodcast.com. Click on guest. There's a form. Fill the form out completely, including the setup questions. Ask me anything you want is not a setup question. Do you know why I ask for setup questions and talking points? I want to know what you have to give. This is your pitch, right? I actually think every podcast host should have a form like mine. I've always said, if you do a podcast, steal it, because it gives you a very quick snapshot of the person proposing to be on. Not some PDF with a freaking headshot and a bunch of bullshit about, you know, so-and-so said this about me. Tell me what you want to talk about. Tell me, that's all that is. I don't ever use people's questions as a script. I take those, I add other things, we segue off five different ways. It just tells me, like, this person's interesting. This person's interesting. I think this, my audience could learn from this person. If you have a product or a service, don't make it a fucking infomercial. Make it informational about the subject. We'll get a good plug in for what you do. I've had a couple people on recently like, man, you didn't plug your shit at all. Come on, tell us. Let's go. Right. I always make sure people get a positive brand experience if they're professional entrepreneurs. But I'm here to inform, educate, and entertain. And if you would like the opportunity to do that with me on your subject, send it on in. Remember, like we talked about not taking risk. What's the risk? I say no. Watch. Everybody listen pay very close attention to me right now. This is Jack Spirico speaking. The answer is no. Are you bleeding? Did you die? No? It'll be okay. Make your pitch. Bring it on, guys. I'm ready to have whoever wants to come talk about something interesting and educational. I think the audience would be informed about. And with that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow with that interview. And have a great week if you don't make it for that show. Have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month. You never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.